Baruchim Habayim, we begin tape number 17. I came a little early this evening and I found myself waiting downstairs before they opened up this lecture room. Sitting not far from me in shul were two rebbeim in yeshiva. One was an 8th grade rebbe and the other was a 9th grade rebbe. The 8th grade rebbe was commenting about how he finds the past few years that his students have dropped in their intellectual capacity, in their analytical ability, and how things that this Rebbe, and he's a veteran Rebbe because I happen to know that when I was in elementary school, he was the 8th grade Rebbe in yeshiva, used to teach as routine. Those things that he used to teach are now above the head of his students in the past few years. The other man, his chavrusa, the 9th grade Rebbe, says, you know, I find the same thing in the 9th grade. Now they teach in two different yeshivas, so it's not the same students, just one year after the other. And this is an observation that is being made by mechanchim all over the country, that what used to be routine in terms of intellectual information and analytical capability is now above the heads of today's students, which means that people are thinking less. Our children are thinking less. They are less capable of thinking also, and their thinking capacity isn't as extensive or as great as it used to be. Now, part of this, of course, has to do with dulling the mind with the television apparatus and the videos and the movies and the like. A lot of this has to do with our Shemiyah and Re'iyah principle, that children are now being given information through sensory modes as opposed to intellectual modes. But there's another thing also involved in this, and that's what we're going to address this evening. And it's related very closely to a complaint that we find not on the side of the mechanchim, but on the side of those that have went through the yeshiva, especially the Beis Yaakov system, meaning the girls' yeshivas. And it's a complaint that's voiced about our chinuch system. It's from the complaint coming from the other end of the table. Now, I believe that the complaint is a serious oversimplification, but it's one that you hear reiterated over and over. I heard it just recently from a social worker to be. A lady called me up, from lady. She's studying to be a social worker and she's writing her thesis or her paper, whatever it is, about people, boys and girls, dropping out of yeshiva. And she looked around, she went to Torah Masorah, she went here, they were, she went there, and people sent her to my office. She gave me surveys for me to distribute among the yeshiva dropouts that I know, asking them why they dropped out, what they liked, what they didn't like. And she had a lot of information that she was doing a lot of research. Now, mind you, a lot of the data that she's going to receive is going to be skewered. It's going to be inaccurate. Because you ask these kids what they felt was wrong with the system, the chances are that you're going to get a very subjective version of what happened. But one particular complaint that is repeated over and over to her, in fact, it's a complaint that's repeated by her as well, because she's gone through the system, she's a frum woman, and it's a complaint that you hear very often. Just recently, in one of the Jewish magazines, I read a woman was writing about it. they claim that in our Beis Yaakov system, the children are not taught to think. They're taught to obey rules. And their questions are left unanswered. And they're told, better not to ask. That's the complaint, that our children are taught not to think, that thinking is bad. Now we have a very interesting thing. We have mechanchim complaining that the children cannot think. We have children complaining that the mechanchim are not teaching them to think. But everybody agrees on both ends that our children are not thinking. The only question is, who's to blame? But everybody agrees that this is the case. As I said, there are many reasons for it. But there's one very great reason that's relevant not only to our chinuch system, but to every Jewish home as well. Before I get to it, however, I must tell you that I take great exception to this social worker and her information. Our Beis Yaakov girls are not taught not to think. Sometimes an illusion may be created that could allow people to get that impression, but it's not so. There's something else happening here. A human being is created with many needs. Some of the needs are physical needs. The need for food, the need for water, the need for air, the need for shelter. Some of the needs are emotional needs. The need for love, the need for attention, need for socializing, meaning the need for a friend. And these needs, the emotional needs, are just as real as the physical ones. They're less measurable. There's no gauge to measure them, but they are just as real. And the damage that's done to a person whose emotional needs are not met is even greater than the damage done to somebody whose physical needs are not met. Now, of course, the person can die of starvation, but I'm not talking an extreme example. I'm talking about somebody whose emotional needs are being shortchanged. I'm saying that that person will grow up to be a dysfunctional or a human being that is functioning far, far from his potential, far, far from what he could be, how he could be functioning. Just imagine if, let's say, you got a report card. You're a little kid, maybe you're 14 years old, and you got a report card. And the report card has straight A's. And you just opened up the envelope and you're in your living room. And you're so happy. You look around your house and there's nobody there. There's nobody to share that happiness with. There's nobody to celebrate with. Somehow, the simcha and the celebration of having straight A's is greatly reduced. Just imagine the emptiness in that girl's heart, that little girl, when she looks up and sees nobody there to share her pride with. Tell me this, if somebody gave you an opportunity to go to the moon and back, but on the condition that nobody would know about it, nobody at all, ever, you wouldn't be able to tell a soul, would you go? Nobody would know that you were ever there. You had an opportunity. And the fact that it's a tough question shows clearly how important our emotional needs are. And a small emotional need, like the emotional need for companionship and for friendship and for sharing our life, is so important that it overshadows, it casts a dark shadow over our material accomplishments, if those accomplishments are not garnished with the fulfilling of our emotional needs. Every child needs love and attention just like he needs food and water. And I'm going to show you that according to Das Torah, the emotional needs of a person is primary, it's key, it's more important even than the physical needs. We know, for instance, there's a mitzvah called Hachnosas Orchim. Hachnosas Orchim is one of the chesed mitzvahs, where you take a poor traveler and you invite him in and you give him room and board, you give him a meal, or whatever. Do you know what the Gemara says is the primary component of the mitzvah of Hachnosas Orchim? It's not the appetizer, it's not the main dish, and it's not the dessert. It's also not his bed. The primary component of the Hachnosas Orchim is when you accompany him to the door, the Levaya it's called technically, where you are malava him out. That piece of dignity that you gave him, that piece of respect, that piece of honor, is the most important component of the mitzvah, more than the physical food. Now when you give him that little piece of dignity, all you're doing is meeting his emotional needs. And you would think that the need to be accompanied out is negligible when compared to food and water and a bed. But says the Gemara in Masechta Sota, it's not so. Giving him emotional support, emotional positive feelings, is more important than meeting his physical needs. And the mitzvah of tzedakah, where you give a poor person money. There are different levels. You can give a person money. You can lend him money. You can give him money anonymously. You can give him money where not only are you anonymous, but you don't even know the identity of the one you're giving. Say you put the money into a pushka. The highest level of tzedakah, though, it says, is when you give a person, a poor person, a job. Now, you give him a job, let's say he's making $250 a week. That's a greater mitzvah, that's a higher level of tzedakah than if you would have handed him the $250 a week and saved him the 9-to-5 work. But look at this, it's an amazing thing. You can give him the money, and you'll give it to him forever and ever. And you're saving him all that work. Isn't it a chesed to save somebody work? Isn't it a chesed to make life easier for somebody? And imagine if you could stay home a whole day and learn rather than go to work. Isn't that a chesed to do for somebody if you can arrange that for him? No. By giving him a job, you are also meeting his emotional need to be independent. His need for dignity. His need for pride. And that makes giving a person a job the highest level of tzedakah. Greater than giving him his leisure and his time to learn, because you're meeting his emotional needs. Now, we, as Fruma Yidden, have known this for thousands of years. This meaning that a person's emotional needs are primary. But the Goyim have just started to figure this out. In survey after survey, they come to the same conclusion. The main complaint that teenagers have against their parents is that the parents tried to replace love and attention with material things. Parents try to buy their love. Parents who have no time for the children. Parents have no patience for the children. Parents who have no self to give to the children. Instead, they'll buy the children things. Fancy furniture in their room, fancy toys, maybe you'll give them a car. And parents think that they're being good to the children by doing that. and you're meeting the physical needs and physical needs at the expense, or you're justifying doing so as a substitute for meeting the children's emotional needs. You are starving the children if you do that. You're starving them. You are withholding from them what they need most. It's like, you know, theoretically, technically, a person can be obese and still suffer from malnutrition. If all he has on his body, if all he has stored up is fat with no real nutrients, with no vitamins, no minerals. So, that's what they tell me. I'm not a doctor, but they tell me that a person like that could suffer from malnutrition. Whether it's true or not in the physical world, I don't know, but in the emotional world, it's certainly true. A child can be spoiled rotten and still be starving for his emotional needs to be met. The pasuk in Vayechi, the Gemara learns out from here. Toiv hamal ben shinayim lechaveroi yoiser mimashkehu cholov. It is better for a person if you smile at him than if you give him a cup of milk. Now doesn't that say it clear and explicitly? If you smile at a person, now we're talking about a stranger, not your children. You smile at a person, you have done a greater service to him than if you would have poured him a cup of milk. Now imagine if somebody sits in the corner, and this is what he does a whole day, and anybody who passes by, rush hour, in Manhattan, he pours him a cup of milk or gives him a little snack. They'd write books about this person, a life of chesed, they'd call it. But that's not nearly as great as somebody that smiles at all the passers-by. Because emotional needs of a person are more important than the physical needs. Now, this talking about strangers, what about your children? Havi makabel es kol odom besever ponim yofus. It says in Pirkei Avos. Do you know what sever ponim yofus means? It means three things. First, it means ponim. This is not my commentary, this comes straight from the Mefarshim. Ponim means you greet him with your face as opposed to the back of your head. When somebody comes to see you, you turn towards him. Yofus means a pleasant face as opposed to a stone face. And sever comes from the word svara, which means an attentive face. You give him your attention. You pay attention to him. You think about him. You give him your undivided attention. Smile at him. That's how you're supposed to greet strangers. Now, what does this mean about how we're supposed to greet our children? We don't have time for this anymore in our society. We live hustle, bustle, rush, rush lives where we could barely say Shalom Aleichem, Aleichem Shalom, a Kiddush Levana type greeting to anybody that comes and greets us and meets us. That's not the way it's supposed to be. When your children come home from school and you're on the telephone and one hand is pressing that receiver against the side of your face, the other hand is holding the wooden spoon and you're mixing the batter, and the little kids are running around and you're trying to maneuver around them while you're mixing the batter and talking on the telephone at the same time, and now your teenager comes home from school. Hi, Rochi. I'm busy now. Get the batter. The teenager can do without the cake. Get the phone. You can do without the gossip. That kid needs your attention. Before we get to Sever Ponim Yofus, first it says, Havi Makabel as Kol Adam. Greet them. When your children come home from school, be there to welcome them. You don't know what kind of wonderful feeling it is for a kid who went through such a hectic day in school, similar to the hectic day you go to at work. And when they come home to a warm, friendly smile and a hug, it means so much to them. You have absolutely no idea. It means so much to them. Much more than when you have the maid pour them a glass of milk and cookies. This applies to strangers. Our children. You multiply it to the 20th power. This is society. This is part of the society that we live in. We live in a rush-rush society that's geared and oriented towards physical accomplishment and material attainment. Success is measured by the number in a person's bank book. And the emotional needs are not given the attention at all in our society that they need. Somebody once commented to Reb Moshe Feinstein Zatzal that in Europe, if let's say somebody was at home and the carriage, the taxi, or whatever it used to be called in the olden days was waiting for them, they used to say, "The taxi driver is waiting for us. Come hurry," you tell your children, or your wife, or your husband. "The taxi driver is waiting. The carriage driver." Here in America, they say, "The taxi is waiting." People don't count. Things count. And a person's value is measured by how many things he has. It didn't always used to be that way, but that's our culture. We know that Rav Aaron Kotler Zatzal, whenever he would pass a toll booth, you know, in the middle of the night, say on the way to Lakewood, on the Garden State Parkway, and you'd have five or six lanes, all the lanes would be empty, and there would be exact change lanes, and one lane that's manned by a person for people that need change. Even if the driver would have exact change, Rav Aaron would instruct him to go to the human being who's manning that lane in order that he shouldn't feel bad that he's being taken over by these machines. That's sensitivity. The makabel es kol adam. Forget about sefer panim yofas. He wouldn't go to the machine when he can go to a human being. Our society has pushed emotions out of the position that they deserve to be in. We live in a cold steel society. We're going to come back to this in a moment. We're going to come back to the idea that we have to give our children attention, emotional attention, as opposed to physical and material attention. But before we do that, we're going to continue describing what society did with this emotional need that's not being met in the way it should. Again, society has suppressed their emotional needs and went along in favor of a material-oriented community. But you should know that society could not escape from the fact that human beings have emotional needs. You can suppress it down over here, but it's going to pop up over there somewhere else. And it did. Society minimized, suppressed emotions, try to push it out of the place where it belongs, but that emotional need has popped up elsewhere, in a place where it doesn't belong. And that's in our educational system. Nowadays, it's true. Children don't think as much as they used to. They're not capable of thinking as well as they used to. They can't analyze, they can't objectively criticize facts and figures like they used to be able to. But you know what they all can do? They can all tell you their feelings about any piece of information in the world. they'll tell you their opinion about any facts and figures that the teacher has to offer them. Oh, our children discuss all concepts that are raised by their teachers. But you know what the discussion nowadays consists of? Your opinions about the information that's being presented to you. What do you think of the president's health care plan? What do you think of this hashkafa? What do you think of... Children will tell you their opinions about anything. They all have opinions. It used to be in the olden days, what did a person do with information? They would break their head trying to understand it. What is the health care plan? What does it mean? What are the advantages? What are the disadvantages? What is the logic behind it? What do the opponents say? Analyze it. Take it apart. Pick it apart. Understand it. Understand something. Information was made to understand. Nowadays, information is not understood. Information is opinionized. We opinionate. We opine about the information that's given to us rather than understand it. The idea is not what this social worker came up with, that we need more discussion in the Beis Yaakovs or less discussion. That's not the point. There's enough discussion. But the discussion is not focused on understanding information. It's focused on your feelings about that information. Our children can have opinions about everything in the world, and they grow up and they have opinions and opinions and opinions. And we always cater to their opinions. Well, I understand your opinion, but maybe it's this way and that way. And opinions are fine and wonderful. But if you don't understand anything, what is your opinion going to be worth? Your opinion should be an expert opinion, not just the opinion of an ignoramus or a layman's opinion. That's what we don't do. We don't try to understand the information, but rather we discuss our feelings about it. So what comes out? What comes out is that the mechanchim are complaining that the children don't think anymore, because they don't. A Rebbe tries to explain to a bacha a piece of Gemara, and we're not interested in your opinion about Rava and Abaya. We're not interested in your feelings about Tosfos' Kasha. Do you understand the Kasha? You have a problem with the Kasha? An objective critique on the Kasha? Let's hear it. And let's figure out if objectively it's a good critique or a bad critique. Forget about how you feel about it. Is it precise? Is it accurate? Do you understand? Are you right? Are you wrong? You know what? One of the differences between learning Torah and just giving opinions about Torah is that is an amazing thing. A Gemara can say something, and maybe somebody doesn't understand it, and they have a big problem with it, maybe an open contradiction. And they write it down in a sefer. It's a brilliant question. And maybe for hundreds of years, nobody can figure out an answer. And then maybe 200 or 300 years later, somebody who, when the question was created, when the question was conceived in the questioner's mind, wasn't even born. His grandparents weren't born. But this guy finds an answer. He figured out an answer. And from now on, the question is no longer schwer. From now on, we have an answer. In learning, what you say is subject to the scrutiny, or can be or should be subject to the scrutiny of hundreds of years of scholars. And if one day somebody comes up with a flaw in your reasoning, it will no longer be used. If one day somebody finds out that your theory or your psak is against the Gemara, goodbye. This is not opinions. This is not an issue of feelings. When learning, we need that skill that's so that we are so badly deprived of today. We need that skill of ruthless objectivity instead of touchy-touchy, feely-feely opinions about what the information you're being given. And that's why the Mechanchim complain that the children don't think. Stuff that years ago an 8th grade Rebbe could tell his class, a concept, can't tell him now. Because the children don't break their heads to understand something. They express their gut feeling about it. And that's it. I understand it, I don't. I don't understand it. To break your head to understand something, that's not done anymore. And that's our society. In the Beis Yaakovs, the problem is intensified. Because the girls don't learn the same way as the boys do. They don't analyze and scrutinize and ask and answer the way boys do in yeshivas. And if you're dealing with what is your opinion about this, and discussion means an expression of your feelings about the information that the teacher has given over, your questions aren't going to be answered because you don't know how to break your head to understand something. Teacher can answer your question or maybe not answer your question, but if it doesn't immediately tickle your fancy, if it doesn't immediately satisfy your kishkes, well, I don't understand it. I'm not taught to think. You're not taught to think. You're not taught to think because your emotions and your opinions and your feelings are the tools. Those are the limbs, the avorim that you are using to try to think and try to understand, and it doesn't work. People think with their minds, not with their kishkes. And that's the problem. So you see what society did. Society suppressed the emotional needs of people where it belongs, in their identity, in what's important to them. And this emotional need came up in a perverted way in the educational system. The way people understand information. There, we in our society feel this emotional need not being met. And that's where we need it. That's where we meet our emotional needs, in the classroom, in the library. When you read something, when you see something, when you hear something. What do I feel about it? What's my opinion about it? And it's a major perversion. What we should do, when we have discussions with our children, and I'm telling you the advanced step, because the beginning step is to have the discussions with your children and give them the time. I promised you we come back to that, and we will. But after you do give them the time, use the time properly. Teach your children to properly understand something. Forget about how they feel about it. Ruthless objectivity. That's the prime ingredient in understanding something. Precision, accuracy. Do you have a problem with this health plan? What is your problem? Do you know what you're talking about? Look it up. Find out information. Forget about your opinion if you like the Democrats better than the Republicans. Tell me why. Prove your point. Objective reasoning, understanding. There's nothing wrong with not having an opinion. Teach yourself to say, I don't know. Chazal. Teach yourself to say, I don't know. Isn't that funny? Why should a person have to teach himself to say, I don't know? It's the easiest answer in the world. It's hard to know. Isn't it easy not to know? The answer is no. You take a look at children nowadays, they know about everything. They'll tell you their opinion on every issue in the world. They have to be taught to say, I don't know. I don't know because I don't have the information. I don't know because I don't understand exactly. An opinion has to be worth something. The Torah frowns upon opinions that are based upon nothing except random feelings, upon kishkes. But today, in our educational system, as part of society, that's what's happening. And as parents, we have to take the bull by the horns. If you're going over your homework with your children, be it Gemara, or be it Navi, or be it social studies, and in the English department, this is much more prevalent than in Limudei Kodesh. Because as I said, Limudei Kodesh contains within it, as a necessary ingredient, the ability to analyze. You could dull it, you could try to avoid it, but it's there to a certain extent by the nature of the limud itself. When your children tell you something about their preferences, it's a question of why. Now, maybe they just have a gut feeling, or maybe it is just an emotional thing, but let them recognize that. Let them recognize the difference between an opinion that's based upon fact as opposed to an opinion that's just a gut feeling. If a child says, well, I'd like my room to be blue rather than red, don't pester him. Don't make him give you mathematical calculations why blue is better than red. Blue is better than red. No, I like blue better than red. Doesn't mean blue's better. There's a difference. You can like something, but that has nothing to do with right and wrong. When you're talking about right and wrong, good and bad, positive and negative, when you're talking about destructive and constructive, when you're talking about decisions to be made in life, what are the right decisions, what are the wrong decisions? What does a child want to be when he grows up? What does a child think of this hashkafa? What you think? What do you know? What do you understand? This is the key to chinuch, and our children are being deprived of it. No, it's not true that our children are being taught not to think. We have redefined thinking. We have a new definition of what thinking is. Thinking is opining. What do you think of this? Means, how do you feel about this? Means, give me your opinion. Do we care how you came to your opinion? No. You know, in the tshuvas of Rav Yosef Engel, he paskens, and this comes from a Maharsha, that ideally, when voting for a Rav, or for a Shoichet, let's say in a congregation, not everybody has a right to vote. He says, only the B'nai Torah have a right to vote. Because they know what they're talking about. You have an Amoritz that knows about as much about a Rav as he does about nuclear physics. He's going to vote. Imagine if you had to have a vote upon which doctor to use. Imagine, let's say, Rachmona Litzlan, somebody got sick. And there are different doctors that have different opinions. One doctor says, operate or he'll die. The other doctor says, don't operate. If you do, he'll die. And the family is in turmoil. They don't know what to do. And they have a discussion. Now imagine, just imagine this. One guy says, I feel that we should operate. I agree with that doctor. That's my opinion. Based on what, you ask him? I'm entitled to, that's my opinion. It's just my feeling. We should operate. Isn't this ridiculous? This is going on, Maisim B'chol Yoim. This is going on every day. Your opinion, your feeling, it's worthless unless you understand. There's a psak from Rabbi Yosef Engel. It's worthless unless you understand. And our children are not being taught to understand, to break your head trying to figure something out. Part of this is also due to our fast food society. Everything is quick, everything is disposable, everything happens immediately. Understanding doesn't happen immediately. There's no such thing as a shortcut to knowledge. It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. And so our children are assaulted from all sides. Their brains are under fire. We've redefined what intelligence or intellectual expression is. and we've lost the ability to think. Without the ability to think, then you're in trouble. You try, parents come to me all the time and say, I can't talk sense into my kid. I just can't talk to him. This is what he feels, this is what he wants, this is what he needs. This is all the inevitable byproduct of a society that gives credence and equal rights and equal power and equal thrust to everybody's opinion regardless of how worthy or worthless it is. You understand how absurd it is when our politicians try to present to the voting populace the pros and the cons of their complex economic plans for the nation. And they're trying to obtain the votes of people that know nothing about economics and can barely balance their own checkbooks. Oh, well, we raise taxes, we lower taxes, this is better for the country, this is worse for the country. And who's voting on this? Who is deciding on this? People that know nothing about anything. Well, I don't know what we can do about the democratic political system. But this is Rabbi Yosef Engel's problem with elections for the Rav, elections for the Shoichet. It's absurd. And our society, which is obsessed with equal rights and equality for everybody, means that the Shmendrik, who's an ignoramus and doesn't know, to a big professor that knows economics like the back of his hand. Now again, I don't know what to do about it, and I'm not suggesting any solutions. I don't know, and I'm really not interested. It's not my problem. But regarding our children and their learning, it is our problem. It's our job to teach our children how to think. Because later in life, they're going to be presented with decisions. They're going to encounter crossroads. And they're going to have to make the right decisions. Some of them, the decisions they will have to make have to do with Yiddishkeit. Some of the decisions they'll have to make have to do with life in general. But the only way they're going to survive in this world is that they're capable of making rational decisions. And that's number one. Number two, and I promised we'd get back to this, Hashem has created emotional needs in our children. And as we saw, emotional needs are even greater and more important than physical needs. When we say that children need the attention of their parents, well, it is true that they need the parents to spend time with them. But more importantly than that, the time you do spend with your children, you should give them your undivided and utmost attention. They need parents to speak to them. They need parents to speak about their problems with them. They need parents to speak about all the shtusim in the world with them. They need parents just to spend time with them really doing nothing. Wash your dishes with your daughter. And speak about nothingness. Not all emotional needs involve intellectual exertion. And just like society, after they suppress their emotional needs in one area, it cropped up somewhere else where it doesn't belong. Same thing happens to our children. If we deprive them of their emotional needs, they're going to find fulfillment of those emotional needs elsewhere. They'll find it on the street. They'll find it through social relationships with people who you do not want them to have social relationships with. Because just like society's emotional needs have to be met, even if it's in a skewered and perverted way, human beings find a way to meet their emotional needs, even if it's in an unhealthy, unwholesome way. I know it's so hard. We work hard for a living. We have barely time to think. Forget about the ability or the talent to think. We barely have the time. We have to find it for our children. And the truth is, if necessary, take out some time that you spend with the physical needs of your family and replace it with time spent on the emotional needs. Get that batter so you won't have a cake on Shabbos. You'll have Jell-O for dessert. Take that time out and spend it with your children. We have to make a din v'cheshbon of how much time we spend on the physical and materialistic parts of our lives. Even 5 minutes with a child makes a big difference. One smile is greater than a cup of milk. One smile and one attentive glance to a child means something. And that's why it's such a danger, such a sakana for our children out on the street, because of that very fact. One smile, one attentive glance means a lot to a kid. And they'll get it out there. So, those are the two things for this evening. Number one, we have to teach our children to think. Thinking means being ruthlessly objective, as opposed to just opinionizing over issues. And two, we have to meet their emotional needs by giving them the time and attention that they need. And both principles are related. And the bottom line is, feeding the emotions where the emotions need to be fed, and feeding the intellect where the intellect needs to be fed, as opposed to confusing the issues, which is what society is doing. And now, it's time for questions. Question. Are our children's needs and feelings really being suppressed? Don't we focus too much on feelings? You have to feel happy today. You have to feel good about yourself. You have to feel content nowadays. Isn't this the reason that children are always discussing feelings? Topic they are always discussing and thinking about. You're right. You're right, they are discussing feelings. But what I'm saying is that the attention to feelings is misplaced. On one hand, feelings are overemphasized, just as you wrote. But the reason why they're overemphasizing the feelings in an area where it's not supposed to be emphasized is because we underemphasize it in other areas. Yes, children can discuss how they feel good. Children can discuss how they feel content. But what they're doing is they're grasping and they're groping for feelings. They're searching so hard for feelings that should have been handed to them on a silver platter. We don't need to discuss feeling content. We need to feel content. We don't need to discuss feeling good. We need to feel good. That's exactly the point. Instead of feeling good, they discuss feeling good. They take their intellectual area of their mind where discussion is, and that's where they throw all the needs for feelings. Feelings belong in the feelings, and the mind belongs in the mind. And you're right, feelings is a topic that's always being discussed. Just like I'm sure food is being discussed in Somalia all the time. It's because they don't have it. And that's why they discuss it. Next question, motivating our children properly. If children are reared in a Torah world, shut out from the exterior media, then they will recognize the difference between right and wrong, truth and fantasy. But where the media intercepts the child's concepts, clear-cut thinking is adversely affected. Change the child's horizons and his thinking will surely be affected. Yes, of course that's true, and I don't know if the person that wrote this question was here at the beginning of the Shmooze, because we mentioned that there's no question that part of the lack of ability to think is due to the dulling of the intellectual capacity by media such as television and radio and all those things that appeal to a person's, every part of a person's self except for his brain. We also mentioned the Shmiya and Re'iya principle that has become one of the core principles and one of the great foundations of this lecture series. Yes, 100%. This affects it too. Only, it's impossible nowadays to shut out our children from everything. I wish it would be possible, but Flatbush is not Mea Shearim. Should it be? That's not for me to say, but the fact is that it's not. And the fact is that the disadvantage of not being Mea Shearim is that your children are exposed to all of these negative influences that dull the thinking process. And you're right. 100%. That contributes to it also. Should children be free to speak out when they have emotional feelings all the time or just sometimes? The answer is yes, provided they know that their emotional feelings are mere emotional feelings, which may not have any backup in reality. You know, you can feel terrible about law and order. You can feel, and this happened last night, right, where somebody was mugged on the train, and then he went back to the muggers, demanded his money back, they refused to give it, so he pulled out a gun and shot them. Happened last night on the one train here in Manhattan. Now, I am certain that there are so many people out there that are giving this guy yashikayach. He should have shot all of them. Truth of the matter is, though, that in society, we can't allow stuff like this to happen. Because allowing everybody to take the law, even al pi halacha, you can't do that. Even if, even a roidif, if somebody's running after someone to kill him, you're allowed to kill the roidif if necessary to save the intended victim. But after the murder is committed, you can't just take revenge. You have to give it due process. Now, here's an example of feelings, and I share these feelings. Yeah, the mugger got it. Good. But intellectually, I know that this guy is going to have to give a din v'cheshbin over what he did. And sure, you can express your feelings, as long as you realize that they're only feelings, and as long as you realize that your feelings do not in any way indicate reality, they do not in any way suggest right and wrong. Feelings are feelings. That's all they are. If a child understands that's all they are, and it has nothing to do with right and wrong, his feelings have nothing to do with the path that he should pursue. Listen, when you're on a roller coaster in an amusement park, you may feel like you are having a very dangerous experience. You may scream and yell, "Ah, I'm falling, I'm this, I'm that," but you know in your mind that it's a game. The drive to Great Adventure on the Garden State Parkway is more dangerous than the roller coaster. Yet nobody screams in the car on the highway. Here is a very good example of the chushim versus the seichel. The dimyon versus the seichel. It's no problem at all for a person to accept and express and recognize his feelings if they know that it's only feelings. Somebody who on a roller coaster really believes that he's falling is in trouble. If a person accepts his feelings as reality, then they're in trouble. Your feelings are fine, as long as you understand the lack of authority that your feelings have. You mentioned about findings being made of physical and emotional feelings in our Torah and only now by non-Torah people. Above is spoken in... Is it a Jewish book, a non-Jewish book? Okay, so we'll mention it. Somebody had suggested the name of the book that discusses the fact that... Well, it's a Jewish book? Okay, not going to mention the name because I know nothing about it. I'm sure it's a wonderful book. But there are many places where you'll find... Many, many places where you'll find that the Torah understands, we have understood for thousands of years, things about human nature, that the Goyim just have no clue about. The Rambam in Moir Nevuchim has a very interesting question. The Rambam in Moir Nevuchim asks, why is it that the Torah, which is a book of laws primarily, so much so that Rashi, the first Rashi in Chumash, asks, he brings from a Chazal, Rabbi Yitzchak, that the Torah should have started from the first mitzvah, get rid of Bereishis and everything. Torah is a book of laws. Why does it have so many stories in it? Isn't it a funny thing to find in the book of laws? Stories. So the Rambam says, in Moir Nevuchim, that the reason why the Torah has so many stories is in order to teach us principles about human nature. That's how important it is. Now, you know, the difference between us and the Goyim is we're learning from the Torah. Hashem created humans. He's the manufacturer. He knew about them. The Goyim, it's like taking a computer and trying to figure it out if you just bought it. This is the manufacturer talking. And so, we don't need any non-Jewish sources to explain to us what makes people tick. We don't need it at all. We have it, we have Sefer Mishlei, we have our Chazals, we have our lessons in Chumash, we have our Mefarshim, we have our Musar Sforim. We don't need it at all. Chochma b'goyim tamin, but Torah b'goyim al tamin. Included in Torah b'goyim al tamin is what makes a human being tick. Because a human being is a Tzelem Elokim. And they're trying to explain to us what makes a Tzelem Elokim tick. That's Torah b'goyim al tamin.